Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Colombia, a return to war? Focusing on the potential consequences of the ELN's latest attack in Colombia. The National Liberation Army claimed responsibility for a suicide car bombing that killed 20 police recruits in Colombia and threatens to endanger the country's fragile peace process. The guerrillas, which are designated as terrorists by the Canadian, Colombian, EU, Peruvian, and U.S. governments, defended the attack by saying that it was legitimately within the rules of war because it didn't target civilians, arguing that it was carried out in response to right-wing President Iván Duque's disregard of the ongoing peace talks. Colombia's newest leader was elected over the summer after pledging to take a hard line towards its country's militants, which caused the fragile peace process between Bogotá and the ELN to naturally break down, and saw the group resort to pipeline bombings and other kinetic actions prior to declaring a Christmas ceasefire before the resumption of talks in Cuba. Some of the ELN's leaders are actually in the island nation right now as part of that process, and Colombia has demanded that Cuba extradite them, though Havana has refused to do so since that would violate the terms under which it agreed to host those talks and therefore undermine its international credibility. Colombia does have a trick up its sleeve that it could try to apply, however, and that's its strategic relationship with the U.S. Bogotá and Washington are decades-long allies, and Trump has signaled that he's not going to be as soft on Cuba as his predecessor was, meaning that his government might seek to get involved in this simmering diplomatic spat and use it as the pretext for implementing more sanctions against the country or other sorts of regime change pressure. Colombia also became NATO's first ever global partner in Latin America last year, and while it's always enjoyed very close ties with the alliance, the military bloc could provide it with additional support in the event that Duque launches a far-reaching crackdown against the ELN in response to what some have reported is intense public pressure to do so. The South American nation could leverage that scenario in order to position itself as a multilateral military platform for pressuring neighboring Venezuela as well, therefore allowing it to proverbially kill two birds with one stone and further increase its strategic significance to the U.S. and NATO. Generally speaking, the resumption of civil war in Colombia could lead to many other unpredictable consequences that might further complicate the changing geopolitics of the region by creating various opportunities and challenges for the relevant stakeholders. So folks, I'm not sure how many of you are paying attention to the ELN suicide bombing in Colombia last weekend, but if you're listening to this program, you're obviously interested enough in it. And I gotta say, it is a very important development, and our experts are going to explain why that is. So the first one we're going to speak to today is Mr. Eldon Cruz. He is a communication strategist currently based in Honduras, where he does regional political analysis.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Eldon, most of our audience probably doesn't know all that much about the ELN, so can you please enlighten them about the group and its role in the Colombian Civil War, especially after Bogotá's 2016 peace deal with FARC?
Sure. Thank you very much, Andrew, for having us here again. Well, you make an interesting point there. Why is it that when talking about the Colombian Civil War, most of us know a couple things about FARC, but almost nothing about ELN? Seriously, both organizations were officially created in 1964, as far as I know. But here's the thing. FARC was born on a region called Marquetalia, on the department of Tolima, out of an armed campesino rebellion against the violent Colombian army actions against the civil population there. ELN, on the other hand, was born out of a university student movement inspired by the Cuban Revolution. So while both movements spring from Marxist ideals, the reality is that FARC was fighting always on a geographical territory, while ELN fights mostly on an ideological territory. This means that, unlike FARC, ELN considers the whole of Colombian territory as a battlefield, which explains also the very unfortunate January 17th bombing of the General Santander Police School headquarters in Colombia. Because from the point of view of ELN, this bombing is a legitimate war move against its Colombian government enemy. And basically they are saying, we're still here, you will still have to deal with us, or you will pay the consequences. Now, President Duque demanded new conditions that were not part of the original deal that kickstarted the peace talks in Havana. which left FARC laying down arms.
Okay, I see. You know, it's very interesting how you drew the distinction between ELN and FARC. I myself didn't know that, and I'm sure most of our audience didn't either. So thank you for clarifying that. Now, Eldon, voters narrowly rejected the government's peace deal with FARC in 2016, but it was later implemented anyhow, though lingering concerns about it are thought to have contributed to Duque's win last year. So, Eldon, how supportive is the population of this peace process in general, and especially as it relates to the talks with ELN?
Yes. You mentioned a key word there, Andrew, narrowly. That is where the answer is, basically. The 2016 Colombia Peace Agreement referendum asked the following question. Do you support the final agreement to end the conflict and build a stable and lasting peace? Yes or no? So you ask yourself, why will anyone answer no? Well, the no vote won, but narrowly. But what you see there is the result of a very aggressive public campaign by former President Álvaro Uribe. He built what he calls his political legacy on a completely offensive military approach to the civil war. You know, he had military assistance from the United States on that. He took back very large territories when the FARC was almost completely overrun in government forces. So the man still commands an uncomfortable sense of gratitude from, you know, around half the population. He launches this very aggressive campaign.
Yeah. What you were saying is that he launched this very aggressive campaign?
Yes. So he launches this very aggressive campaign telling people, hey, do you really want those who committed crimes to escape justice?
I see. You know, I hadn't really looked at it that way, but that put a lot of things into focus for us. Thank you, Eldon. Now, the last thing I want to talk to you about is how some ELN officials are currently in Cuba as part of the peace process, and Havana refuses to extradite them following Bogota's request. So to what extent could the island nation and also its U.S. foe be dragged, be it diplomatically or militarily, respectively, into the latest escalation of hostilities between Colombia and ELN?
Yeah, well, first we have to look at why Havana refuses to extradite these ELN officials, Andrew. Remember, this peace deal was many years in the making. They have protocols established. One of those protocols establishes that the standard procedure in case the talks break down. The protocol is upheld by the guarantor countries and signed directly between states involved. Now, President Duque, since taking office, he has backtracked on all standing agreements signed by the Colombian state. He's changing the demands of his government under the justification that his government is not bound by the agreements signed by the previous President Santos administration. You know, Andrew, one of the main principles of governance and international relations is precisely that agreements are signed between states, not governments. He cannot accuse Cuba of harboring terrorists. That will be false because ELN officials there in Cuba have been there for almost a year. Cuba demanded that they sign an agreement promising not to be involved in hostilities against Colombia. So he can break the agreements, but the next time Colombia asks for assistance, no countries will want to get involved. This situation will obviously be exploited by the U.S., at least in the PR sense against Cuba and Venezuela.
Okay, Eldon, this is a really interesting conversation. You taught us a lot about the situation in Colombia and especially about the ELN. So thank you for briefing us about this.
So thanks for having me on board, Andrew. It's been a great talk.
Now we're going to hear what Mr. Hervoye Moric has to say. He's a former aging professor of international relations at Mexico's Tecnológico de Monterrey, a global perspectives teacher at the Nazarbayev Intellectual School in Kazakhstan, and the host of the Geopolitics and Empire podcast.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Hervoye, the ELN said that it carried out last weekend's suicide car bomb attack for strictly military reasons because of Duque's disregard for the fragile peace process. So how successful of an attack do you think this was in the military sense, and in what ways might it have backfired in the soft power one?
Well, the ELN is saying that this was a response. This attack was a response to a government attack on a camp on December 25th. And it's good to question why the government would try to disrupt this peace process. Militarily, I don't think it meant very much. And I don't think it really served the ELN very well because the peace process has been sabotaged. And it's kind of been a pretext for the Duque government to, you know, call off the dialogues and wanting to extradite the negotiators from Cuba. In that sense, militarily, it hasn't been very successful. And in terms of soft power, I've spoken to some Colombian contacts that I have, and it seems a lot of people are just tired of the violence in Colombia, and they want peace from both sides. perhaps the older generation maybe are more hardliners because they have the memories of the Civil War and they participated in it. And maybe there's, you know, some profit to be made in the Colombian military complex. But a lot of the younger generation, they don't want war. I would think a lot of people just want to see the negotiations continue.
Okay, I see, Hervoya. Well, you know, Colombia right now, it's officially NATO's first so-called global partner in Latin America. So in the event that Duque does use this recent attack as a pretext to crack down on the ELN, like you suggested, and a lot of other people are forecasting, in what ways, if any, might he seek to leverage this new partnership to his country's advantage?
Well, I think it's good to look at the context. I was listening to one very good analyst, Alfred Jalife from Mexico, and I would agree with him. I think we're seeing something of a Monroe Doctrine 2.0. And he basically says that Trump and the U.S. are winning in Latin America. We can see Brazil and Colombia effectively within the U.S. sphere of influence. And it's an interesting fact that these are the top two countries in Latin America in terms of military budgets and spending. And so we've seen Bolsonaro say he's of Brazil say he's open to hosting a U.S. military base in Brazil. And he was one of the first to recognize the opposition interim president in Venezuela, you know, last night. So we have this ongoing coup in Venezuela. And as you mentioned, Colombia is now a NATO global partner, first in the Latin American space. And now we have this ongoing U.S. attempt at regime change in Venezuela. So if you kind of connect the dots, it seems that the U.S. is really their presence now, they're reestablishing their presence in Latin America. And how might Colombia leverage this? You know, if they do crack down, part of their relationship with NATO includes interoperability of armed forces. And so, you know, they might feel they have this U.S. backing so they can act more brazenly, more aggressively. They can receive military assistance. And if you go to an extreme, you know, they can always use pretexts of humanitarian intervention, responsibility to protect R2P, as we've seen them do in Libya. They seem to be tying a lot of what's happening to the in Venezuela. They're saying that the ELN attack is coming out, the rebels are coming out of Venezuela. They want to list Venezuela as a U.S. terrorism sponsor on the list. And New Year's, they're saying that there was an assassination attempt on the Colombian president coming out of Venezuela. So there seems to be this connection with the current coup underway in Venezuela.
Yeah, sure. Sounds like there are a lot of scenarios at play, and I like how you put everything into focus by framing it in the angle of a Monroe Doctrine 2.0 that really makes things a lot more understandable. Now, Hervoye, what would be the domestic and regional consequences then if Colombia does slide back into a more intensified period of civil war following the ELN suicide bombing attack and the likely collapse of the very fragile peace process in Cuba?
You know, I really hope that it doesn't go that way. I personally don't think that they would slide into an intense civil war, and if it does, I hope it wouldn't last very long. Colombia does have its international commitments, like with these peace talks, such as with Norway, and, you know, it seems like they're trying to move away from this, but that would kind of ruin their reputation if they did, and, you know, you would see great powers getting more involved and greater international diplomatic intervention in terms of regional consequences. And, you know, domestically, well, again, it would be a reversion to violence that most people are trying to avoid.
Hervoye, thank you for your very deep analysis about this topic. It helped us better understand what took place last weekend in Colombia and how it fits into the larger paradigm of what you described as the Monroe Doctrine 2.0.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, if we think back on what both Eldon and Hervoye shared this today, I think we can conclude that what happened in Colombia was very, very important. It does have regional geopolitical ramifications. In fact, we can even say trans-regional in terms of spreading from South America to the Caribbean, given Cuba's connection to the ELN by virtue of hosting it for peace talks. And we all have to keep our eyes on Venezuela as well, given what just happened earlier this week in the country. I mean, Colombia has been destabilizing the country as well. Venezuela has been accused of having links to the ELN. It seems like this is a very, very tricky process that's unfolding right now. It seems to be unpredictable, but like Kervoya argued, some people might know what's going on, and those are American strategists that are orchestrating what he described as the Monroe Doctrine 2.0. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kuripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.